If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Dave Flyer back with you with Mr. Dave Schwann now this morning. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, Dave. Good morning. It's getting organized as usual.
You're getting organized, and my headphone cord got stuck underneath my chair, and I was like a foot below the mic. I rolled over myself, kind of. That wasn't good. That wouldn't have been fun.
Below the mic.
What's going on, my friend? How are you this Sunday morning? It's like January.
I still can't believe it's the 15th of May and we're reporting on a frost advisory here.
Terrible.
That's going to be our lead story at 5 o'clock, actually. And I was telling Roger when I walked in that he asked me if I bundled up. It was 45, I think, in my car thermometer.
Wow.
But one positive here, I actually heard a bird chirping.
Oh, okay.
When I was leaving my garage.
A bird crying.
Yeah, I'm crying probably, yes. So, all will yet be well.
I think so.
July 28th,
yeah.
But, you know...
Well, I see 80s in the future a little bit here. And then I also, you know, we were just talking off air. We're going to hang out. I think this might be the fourth year that I'm doing all the summer holidays for Steve Cochran. So we just got to secure you for July 4th and for Labor Day.
Labor Day.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but we'll be in on Memorial Day morning, which will be an interesting show a couple weeks from now. And I'll be in like 5 to 8, and then Steve's got this pre-taped. He'll have a special for Memorial Day with his Rags of Honor and I think Honor Flight as well, which he does, which is very cool. But, yeah, we'll hang out.
That Honor Flight is just a marvelous organization.
Yeah, you know what?
I had thought a couple of times myself of just being like a volunteer.
Let me tell you who just did that, and I saw it on his Facebook page, is the former GM here of WGN, Tom Langmeier.
Oh.
He's up north in Wisconsin.
Right.
And he took a Korean War vet. He got home at like midnight. They leave at like 7 o'clock in the morning, and they get home at like 11 o'clock at night. So it's an in-and-out same day. But he's in charge of this Korean War vet and took him to Washington, D.C. for the day and on a plane that's chartered just for war veterans, and they're finally now letting Korean War veterans, because our World War II veterans, there's not many left.
They're veterans.
Yeah.
They have
veterans.
Served
yes,
with
they have. Yep.
Distinction with
yeah.
our country, yes.
Yeah, so Tom did that today, so that's pretty cool.
That's great.
Pretty cool stuff.
Excellent.
History, you know, speaking of which, the 1881, the American Red Cross, founded by Clara Barton, and the organization today provides volunteer disaster relief in the U.S. and abroad. Including collecting and distributing donated blood, teaching health and safety classes, feeding those who are hungry. So the American Red Cross, 1881. 1890.
I was going to say Florence Nightingale, but between her and Clara Barton.
That's right. That's right. That's
so,
right.
Okay.
1890. Canadian pharmacist and chemist John J. McLaughlin of Ontario opened a carbonated water plant in Toronto and created Canada Dry Ginger Ale. Let's take a little listen.
Canada Dry Ginger Ale comes in the handy six-pack. So light, dry, not sugary sweet, not filling. So sparkling, the bubbles tickle your nose. Family-sized bottles of Canada Dry pour 5 big glasses. Canada Dry, America's first family of beverages.
Did you think about that when you drink that? It's the first family of beverages, Dave?
No, I just enjoyed it.
All right. 1924. Here's a big one, Dave. 92 years of WGN radio.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, 92 years. So one evening in early 1924, Colonel McCormick and his mom were given a special radio demonstration that so impressed McCormick that he wanted to get back into the broadcasting game. So while the Tribune could have applied to get their own license, the Colonel preferred leasing time rather than owning it. So he's a shrewd businessman as well. And it was in March that he entered into agreement to rent time and facilities from WJAZ. In addition to news, the Tribune provided musical programming as well. He would acquire the new call letters, WGN, and then later struck up a deal with WDAP that had just been purchased by the Drake Hotel and took control of it on at the end of May of 1924. And WDAP, the call letters, were changed to WGN, standing for?
The World's Greatest Newspaper.
That's right. Which is in a battle right now.
You know, it is intriguing, isn't it? And, you know, the colonel could not have imagined all of the corporate things that have gone on here, what, in the last 30 years or
so. Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I don't think we actually started doing having broadcasts from here until 1934. I think is what it was.
The tower, yes.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact,
yeah.
WGN-TV was here at first. There was an area for WGN-TV and when they went on the air in 1948, and then the building on Bradley Place was dedicated, I think.
61,
exactly.
61,
yes.
So that's 55 years ago this year? Wow.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's where, you know, they obviously debuted the news. It was the busiest, one of the busiest television studios ever, because it was Bozo, it was Ray Rayner, it was After School, it was Garfield. Everything was going on there.
I can remember being there in high school on kind of a tour, and believe it or not, our high school choir sang on one of the Christmas programs
had
there. It was cool.
You know, funny you say that. My mom said the same thing.
She went to
Alvernia, and she was on the air on WGN with her high school.
You could put your high school in for, I don't know, some kind of a drawing or an audition, and if you were chosen, they would have you in, and, you know, you picked several of the, you know, the numbers that your choir sounded at its best. And then they ran it on Christmas Eve.
Wow.
It was a Christmas Eve program where they would run several high school regional area choirs.
I love that.
And I remember talking to a cameraman or a person who was working on the set saying that he'd been there from the beginning and they had outgrown the place, you know, a year or two after they moved in.
Wow.
So it was really neat. I mean, he took us by where Bozo was, because Bozo was still on the air.
Oh, sure.
This is 1973.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And Bozo was still
Donahue,
on the air.
Donahue, probably.
Yeah, it was just getting started with Donahue.
Donahue.
That's right.
Studio 2 or Studio B, whatever that is. Yeah, yeah. Studio 1 is where all the kid shows were. And we'll talk about this in September, too, when it comes around, but I remember being there for the Bozo show, but I also remember being an altar boy on Mass for Shut-Ins.
Were you on that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's funny. My aunt saved my appearance on Mass for Shut-Ins, but not Bozo. Hysterical. And you know what I remember?
She was looking out for you, Dave.
You know what's funny is I remember standing up at the altar and in my cassock, and I was looking straight ahead to about five pews deep, and right behind that was the WGN News 9 desk. So you were looking at the news desk. I mean, everything, you know, they just moved stuff
around.
Oh,
they just moved it away.
Yeah.
So it would be out of range of the camera.
Yeah, and I could even see myself in the video, like, looking at the news desk, like, wow, that's pretty damn cool. Yeah. Yeah, they just moved stuff around. I mean, there was only three studios, and they had, what, probably 15, 20 shows going on at the same
time. I think they did
time.
Romper Room, too, there.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, Roger says yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, they did it here?
Yeah.
In this building. Oh,
okay.
Roger said in Trip Tower.
Okay,
all right.
That makes sense. That makes sense probably for the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. 1928, Mickey Mouse made his first appearance in Plain Crazy. It's an American animated short film directed by Walt Disney. It was released in 1929. By Walt Disney Studios. So it was created in 28. Here it is. It was made as a sound film and given a test screening in a theater and an audience in May of 1928, but failed to be picked up by a distributor. Later, Disney released Mickey's first sound cartoon, Steamboat Willie, which was an enormous success, and then Plain Crazy was released afterwards. But that was the first one that was actually produced. Let's take a listen. Hard to show what animation looks like on the radio.
That still is an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 1932, Amelia Earhart became the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic. She departed Newfoundland, Canada at 7 p.m. and landed near London Barrier, Ireland, completing a 2,000-mile flight in about 13 hours. 5 years later, along with her navigator, Fred Noonan, she related to Brian, you think? disappeared while trying to fly her twin-engine plane around
the equator.
Yeah.
We'll have to ask him sometime.
We'll have to ask him, absolutely. Let's see here. 1965. Oh, here's a favorite. The first SpaghettiOs were sold.
Oh, SpaghettiOs.
Yep.
The
Campbell's soup.
Spaghetti you can eat with a spoon.
Yeah, Franco-American, which was under Campbell's. The pasta was created by Donald Gorky, again in 1920. Oh, no, he was born in 1926. The Daddy-O of SpaghettiOs was his nickname.
Oh, God.
And he created, this guy, though, created about 100 products for Campbell's soups and for Franco-American, including the Chunky line of soups. Let's listen to a classic commercial.
It's the greatest invention since the napkin.
There you go. Ooh, that's a bad sound quality, but there's a little SpaghettiO for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm still envisioning the little kids making O's with their index finger and thumb. And
was it the Campbell Soup Kids? Was it the Campbell?
I think it was the Campbell Soup Kids, probably. Yeah,
that makes sense. All right, Gilligan's Island. Here, I get a little trivia for you. 1981, the Harlem Globetrotters visited Gilligan's Island. You know, they did all those reunion shows in the 1970s, and it was like Rescue from Gilligan's Island. I remember that was a big deal. It was a big, like, TV event. Like, it was highly rated.
And you know what? I have not seen that. I don't know if it's on YouTube where you can watch it.
Yeah, I almost think it's public domain. But but it was actually pretty good. I remember watching it.
They had a parade or something for them.
And it was the late 1970s, so it was only like 10 years after the show went off the air. But then it was like, after that, it was like the Castaways of Gilligan's. It was like all kinds of weird little movies. And then this is the one that I knew was over when they said the Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
Like they were just on Scooby-Doo, and then they were on Gilligan's Island. I'm like, are you kidding me? If you ever try to watch the real Gilligan's Island now, it's not easy to watch.
It's a little silly, I guess, is one way to put it.
I mean, some of these shows.
Well, you know what's going to happen. You know all. You know, Ginger is going to try and seduce Gilligan, and
yes.
You know, you just know what's going to happen with those.
But it's just corny, silly. Like the other show that I watched, that outside of watching the music videos. It was MeTV or Antenna TV had on the Monkees, and I'm like, kids, you got to watch this. It's so funny. You got to watch this show. And I was like, really? I mean, the music is great to watch, but not as funny as it used to be. So I think it just has to serve itself. 1989, the final episode of Family Ties. 1990, the series finale of Newhart, entitled The Last Newhart.
Which was brilliant.
I still think that was... probably
that was brilliant.
The best series finale ever. It really,
you may
think
be
about
right.
It.
You know, get technical about it, but just talk about an unexpected ending.
So this is Bob Newhart's second show that he did on CBS, where he was an innkeeper, and the story goes. And I was watching this when I was picking this up in an interview. I was watching Suzanne Plachette talk about this, and she said that Ginny Newhart. So this is Bob's wife. Said years before the series, the series might have began. And she said, you know, Bob, when you do this last episode, they were out to dinner with Suzette, you should wake up in bed next to Emily and the iconic bedroom and all that other stuff. And Suzanne Plachette, I saw the interview, and she said, you know, Bob and I were laying in bed and the curtain was closed and they didn't tell the entire cast what they were going to do.
Oh, really?
The ending that they filmed with the cast was Bob got hit in the head with a golf ball and he died and went to heaven, and it was who he was running into in heaven. So this was this was a completely different ending so that the cast didn't know. Now, lo and behold, they had the studio audience there and they had the curtains closed and they rebuilt and redesigned based off of pictures the Bob Newhart show bedroom set. And she said, I remember sitting under the covers with Bob going, and think about that, just to begin with. They're they're sitting under the covers next to each other talking about, I wonder if they're going to recognize the set.
Yeah.
Like, are they going to get it right away? So the curtains opened up, and before they could even get to anything, and they just barely lit it, the audience went wild because they knew.
Yeah.
Let's take a listen.
Honey, wake up. You won't believe the dream I just had. What? Don't you want to hear about it?
So Suzette just peeked out of the covers.
Suzanne,
yeah. Push that. Yes, thank you.
All right, Bob. What is it?
That's after about 20 years of smoking, you know.
Crazy little town in Vermont.
I'm happy for you. Good night.
Nothing made sense in this place. I mean, the maid was an heiress. Her husband talked in alliteration. The handyman kept missing the point of things. And then there were these three woodsmen, but only one of them talked.
That settles it. No more Japanese food before you go to bed.
I believe a Japanese firm took over the inn. That's why the time
was. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, a Japanese firm moved in. They wanted the property,
and
took it
this
over.
Beautiful blonde.
Go back to sleep, Bob.
Good night, Ellen.
What do you mean, beautiful blonde?
Go to sleep, Emily. You know you. You really should wear more sweaters.
So for somebody that was watching this show for whatever it was, 6 or 7 years, and then saw it end that way, that the entire series was a dream. Because you know what? I love the old Bob Newhart show.
Oh,
That was my absolute favorite. In fact, it's on... I think it's MeTV on Sunday nights, and I DVR and I watch it, you know, sometime during the week. I do. It's classic. I don't even think I saw all of them, to be honest with you, at some point. Because in 1972, I was in kindergarten when it debuted.
Thank you. Thank you. I think it was on Saturday nights.
Yeah, it was the big Saturday night on CBS, which was All in the Family. I believe MASH was part of that at one point, and it was... The Bob Newhart Show, the Jeffersons might have been on there as well, and then it was the Carol Burnett Show. So think about that line. Oh, Mary Tyler Moore.
Mary Tyler Moore, yes.
It was All in the Family, MASH, I think, at first. Mary Tyler Moore,
and
Bob
Newhart. And Mary Tyler
Moore
and Bob Newhart.
And networks just blow off Saturdays like they don't even exist anymore. And that was the biggest night on television.
It was.
When you think about that.
Yeah, yep.
1993, the final episode of The Wonder Years, which I was a huge fan of The Wonder Years, and I remember how... That ended. They kind of told everybody how everybody got on with their life and lived their life, and broke the news that the dad died just a couple years later. I remember how sad that was, but it was what a fun, brilliant show that was. You know, it was one of the first sitcoms on the air that didn't have an audience. It was a single camera show, and I just loved that show. 1998, in one of the biggest antitrust lawsuits of the 20th century, American software giant Microsoft was sued by the federal government and 20 state governments, charging the company with using unfair tactics to crush the competition and restrict choices for consumers. The lawsuits allege that Microsoft used illegal practices to deny personal computer owners the benefits of a free and competitive market and developed a chokehold on the internet browser software market. That's kind of still the case. I mean, who doesn't use Microsoft Word or Excel, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's all we use. Any big plans for today, big guy?
I am going to do what we do here on Sunday mornings
with Mr. Richards,
yourself, with Dean.
Love
yes,
that.
And I think Amanda Vinicky is in for Rick this morning.
Okay,
and then of course Steve Dale's Pet World at 6:30, and then this afternoon getting ready for a road trip. We hit the road tomorrow morning, going up north and beginning work on our series on the 100th anniversary of the National Parks.
Are you back next week?
Oh, yeah. Be
Beautiful.
Back next week.
We'll talk a little bit about that then.
Right. We'll tomorrow through Friday.
I think Dean also is playing some stuff from his early days because, you know, he's being inducted to the Silver Circle this week, which I think I'm going to see you at, too.
Definitely at the WGN Walk of Fame induction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll do that as well.
Mm-hmm.